Chapter 35. Oh, poor Owen. Broke from Anna. Through all the intricacies of her suffering she felt the separate pang of his. And I want to ask you, the girl continued, to let me see him. For of course, she added in the same strange voice of energy, I wouldn't unless you consented. To see him? Anna tried to gather together her startled thoughts. What use would it be? What could you tell him? I want to tell him the truth, said Sophie Viner. The two women looked at each other, and a burning blush rose to Anna's forehead. Don't understand, she faltered. Sophie waited a moment, then she lowered her voice to say, I don't want him to think worse of me than he need. Dot, worse? Yes, to think such things as you're thinking now. I want him to know exactly what happened. Then I want to bid him goodbye. Anna tried to clear a way through her own wonder and confusion. She felt herself obscurely moved. Wouldn't it be worse for him? To hear the truth? It would be better, at any rate, for you and Mr. Darrow. At the sound of the name Anna lifted her head quickly. I've only my stepson to consider. The girl threw a startled look at her. You don't mean you're not going to give him up? Anna felt her lips harden. Don't think it's of any use to talk of that. Oh, I know. It's my fault for not knowing how to say what I want you to hear. Your words are different. You know how to choose them. Mine offend you, and the dread of it makes me blunder. That's why, the other day, I couldn't say anything. Couldn't make things clear to you. But now must, even if you hate it. She drew a step nearer, her slender figure swayed forward in a passion of entreaty. Oh, listen to me. What you've said is dreadful. How can you speak of him in that voice? Don't you see that I went away so that he shouldn't have to lose you? Anna looked at her coldly. Are you speaking of Mr. Darrow? I don't know why you think your going or staying can in any way affect our relations. You mean that you have given him up because of me? Oh, how could you? You can't really love him. And yet, the girl suddenly added, you must, or you'd be more sorry for me. I'm very sorry for you, Anna said, feeling as if the iron band about her heart pressed on it a little less inexorably. Then why won't you hear me? Why won't you try to understand? It's all so different from what you imagine. I've never judged you. I'm not thinking of myself. He loves you. I thought you'd come to speak of Owen. Sophie Viner seemed not to hear her. He's never loved anyone else. Even those few days, I knew it all the while. He never cared for me. Please don't say any more, Anna said. I know it must seem strange to you that I should say so much. I shock you, I offend you. You think me a creature without shame. So I am, but not in the sense you think. I'm not ashamed of having loved him, no, and I'm not ashamed of telling you so. It's that justifies me and him too. Oh, let me tell you how it happened. He was sorry for me. He saw I cared. I knew that was all he ever felt. I could see he was thinking of someone else. I knew it was only for a week. He never said a word to mislead me. I wanted to be happy just once, and I didn't dream of the harm I might be doing him. Anna could not speak. She hardly knew, as yet, what the girl's words conveyed to her, save the sense of their tragic fervor, but she was conscious of being in the presence of an intenser passion than as he had ever felt. I am sorry for you. She paused. But why do you say this to me? After another interval she exclaimed, you'd no right to let Owen love you. No, that was wrong. At least what's happened since has made it so. If things had been different, I think I could have made Owen happy. You were all so good to me, I wanted so to stay with you. I suppose you'll say that makes it worse. My daring to dream I had the right. But all that doesn't matter now. I won't see Owen unless you're willing. I should have liked to tell him what I've tried to tell you, but you must know better. You feel things in a finer way. Only you'll have to help him if I can't. He cares a great deal. It's going to hurt him. Anna trembled. H, I know. What can I do? You can go straight back to Giver now, at once. So that Owen shall never know you followed him. Sophie's clasped hands reached out urgently. Andy, you can send for Mr. Darrow, bring him back. Owen must be convinced that he's mistaken, and nothing else will convince him. Afterward I'll find a pretext, oh, I promise you. But first he must see for himself that nothing's changed for you. Anna stood motionless, subdued and dominated. The girl's ardor swept her like a wind. Oh, can't I move you? Someday you'll know, Sophie pleaded, her eyes full of tears. Anna saw them, and felt a fullness in her throat. Again the band about her heart seemed loosened. She wanted to find a word, but could not. All within her was too dark and violent. She gave the girl a speechless look. I do believe you, she said suddenly. Then she turned and walked out of the room. XXXII, she drove from Miss Painter's to her own apartment. The maidservant who had it in charge had been apprised of her coming, and had opened one or two of the rooms, and prepared a fire in her bedroom. Anna shut herself in, refusing the woman's ministrations. She felt cold and faint, and after as he had taken off her hat and cloak she knelt down by the fire, and stretched her hands to it. In one respect, at least, it was clear to her that she would do well to follow Sophie Viner's counsel. It had been an act of folly to follow Owen, and her first business was to get back to Giver before him. But the only train leaving that evening was a slow one, which did not reach Franchuel till midnight, and she knew that her taking it would excite Madame de Chantel's wonder and lead to interminable talk. As he had come up to Paris on the pretext of finding a new governess for Effie, and the natural thing was to defer her return till the next morning. She knew Owen well enough to be sure that he would make another attempt to see Miss Viner, and failing that, would write again, and await her answer. So that there was no likelihood of his reaching Giver till the following evening. Her sense of relief at not having to start out at once showed her for the first time how tired she was. The bond had suggested a cup of tea, but the dread of having anyone about her had made Anna refuse, and as he had eaten nothing since morning but a sandwich bought at a buffet. She was too tired to get up, but stretching out her arm she drew toward her the armchair which stood beside the hearth, and rested her head against its cushions. Gradually the warmth of the fire stole into her veins and her heaviness of soul was replaced by a dreamy buoyancy. She seemed to be seated on the hearth in her sitting room at Giver, and Darrow was beside her, in the chair against which she leaned. He put his arms about her shoulders, and drawing her head back looked into her eyes. "F all the ways you do your hair, that's the way I like best," he said. Dot dot, a log dropped, and she sat up with a start. There was a warmth in her heart, and she was smiling. Then she looked about her, and saw where she was, and the glory fell. She hid her face and sobbed. Presently she perceived that it was growing dark, and getting up stiffly she began to undo the things in her bag, and spread them on the dressing table. She shrank from lighting the lights, and groped her way about, trying to find what she needed. She seemed immeasurably far off from everyone, and most of all from herself. It was as if her consciousness had been transmitted to some stranger whose thoughts and gestures were indifferent to her. Dot dot, suddenly she heard a shrill tinkle, and with a beating heart she stood still in the middle of the room. It was the telephone in her dressing room, a call, no doubt, from Adelaide Painter. Or could Owen have learned she was in town? The thought alarmed her, and she opened the door and stumbled across the unlit room to the instrument. She held it to her ear, and heard Darrow's voice pronounce her name. "Will you let me see you? I've come back, I had to come. Miss Painter told me you were here." She began to tremble, and feared that he would guess it from her voice. She did not know what she answered. She heard him say, "Colin, I can't hear." She called S, and laid the telephone down, and caught it up again, but he was gone. She wondered if her S had reached him. She sat in her chair and listened. Why had she said that she would see him? What did she mean to say to him when he came? Now and then, as she sat there, the sense of his presence enveloped her as in her dream, and she shut her eyes and felt his arms about her. Then she woke to reality and shivered. A long time elapsed, and at length she said to herself, "He isn't coming." The doorbell rang as she said it, and she stood up, cold and trembling. She thought, "Can he imagine there's any use in coming?" and moved forward to bid the servant say she could not see him. The door opened, and she saw him standing in the drawing room. The room was cold and fireless, and a hard glare fell from the wall lights on the shrouded furniture, and the white slips covering the curtains. He looked pale and stern, with a frown of fatigue between his eyes, and she remembered that in 3 days he had traveled from Giver to London and back. It seemed incredible that all that had befallen her should have been compressed within the space of 3 days. "Thank you," he said as she came in. She answered, "It's better, I suppose." He came toward her and took her in his arms. She struggled a little, afraid of yielding, but he pressed her to him, not bending to her, but holding her fast, as though he had found her after a long search. She heard his hurried breathing. It seemed to come from her own breast, so close he held her, and it was she who, at last, lifted up her face and drew down his. She freed herself and went and sat on a sofa at the other end of the room. A mirror between the shrouded window curtains showed her crumpled traveling dress and the white face under her disordered hair. She found her voice and asked him how he had been able to leave London. He answered that he had managed, he'd arranged it, and she saw he hardly heard what she was saying. "I had to see you," he went on, and moved nearer, sitting down at her side. "Yes, we must think of Owen, oh, Owen." Her mind had flown back to Sophie Viner's plea that she should let Darrow return to Giver in order that Owen might be persuaded of the folly of his suspicions. The suggestion was absurd, of course. She could not ask Darrow to lend himself to such a fraud, even as he had the inhuman courage to play her part in it. She was suddenly overwhelmed by the futility of every attempt to reconstruct her ruined world. No, it was useless, and since it was useless, every moment with Darrow was pure pain. "I've come to talk of myself, not of Owen," she heard him saying. "When you sent me away the other day, I understood that it couldn't be otherwise then. But it's not possible that you and I should part like that. If I'm to lose you, it must be for a better reason." "A better reason?" "Yes. A deeper one. One that means a fundamental disaccord between us. This one doesn't, in spite of everything it doesn't. That's what I want you to see and have the courage to acknowledge." "If I saw it, I should have the courage." "Yes. Courage was the wrong word. You have that. That's why I'm here." "But I don't see it," she continued sadly. "Oh, it's useless, isn't it? And so cruel." He was about to speak, but she went on, "I shall never understand it, never." He looked at her. "Who will someday? You were made to feel everything. I should have thought this was a case of not feeling on my part, you mean?" He faced her resolutely. S. It. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.